Good morning, everybody. Please be seated. Our first case this morning is case number 67832, Laborers International Union North America versus Office of the Labor Commissioner. And for the, we have Mr. Langton for the appellant, and we have Mr. Smith and Mr. Whitehead for the respondent. Now, will you be splitting argument? Okay, I'm going to cut you off at 7.5 minutes because since I've been on the court, I see that the first person usually goes 12 or 13 minutes and then the other person gets up with 2 minutes. I'm not going to let that happen today or ever when I'm presiding. Okay, so 7.5 minutes, sit down. You end up in the middle of a sentence. Okay? Unless you want to make it, you know, a different allocation of time. Okay, we're ready to go. Mr. Langton for the appellate.
Thank you, Your Honor. Justice Cherry, Justice Given, Justice Douglas. For the record, my name is Michael Langton. I represent Laborers Local 169. Assume for the sake of argument that in Clark County, electricians use small gas-powered machines to dig trenches for the purpose of installing conduit, and they get paid at the electrician's rate. In Marshall County, the same work is done by operating engineers, and they get paid operating engineers' rate. But the Labor Commissioner has put on his or her website, as part of the annual wage survey, that the job descriptions for laborers includes digging all trenches where pipe of any type is to be placed, whether done manually or with the aid of a machine, and he did so with the intended purpose of having the job descriptions to have, and I quote, the force and effect of law, end quote, as Labor Commissioner Johnson did in 2001. And assume a laborer digs the trench in Clark County for the purpose of installing electrical conduit using a machine, and the same thing happens in Washoe County. Which rate should the laborer be paid on a public works project? Did the Labor Commissioner set jurisdictions by jurisdictions for the involved crafts? Did he create new law? That hypothetical, in my opinion, illustrates the issues in this case. Did the Labor Commissioner engage in rulemaking when he unilaterally determined job descriptions and posted them on his website as part of the annual wage survey, especially since the job descriptions are the same for each and every county in the state and therefore have general applicability?
As to that issue,
so what shall the remedy be?
As to that issue, would you like to kind of walk us down an overview of the three cases that are really up for review, the Littlefield case, the Southern Nevada Operating Engineers case, and the City Plan case, how they relate to what's before us?
Yes, in my view, Justice Douglas, all three of us have, all the parties have relied upon Littlefield City Plan and the Aztec Southern Nevada case. That's exactly where I'm heading, is that in the Littlefield case, this court said that the agency engages in rulemaking when it promulgates or amends a standard or directive or a statement of general applicability. I think that's exactly what happened in 2002, when Labor Commissioner Johnson posted those job descriptions, is that he effectively changed the job classifications by defining jurisdictions among the various crafts. And the reason I came up with that hypothetical is because I think that that truly sets the case here, Southern Nevada Operating Engineers case, the Aztec case, this court said that the notice and hearing requirements are not mere technicalities, that they are essential in a rulemaking situation. Now, in the Labor Commissioner's reply brief, or answering brief, I'm sorry, they rely heavily on the City Plan case. And in the City Plan case, the Labor Commissioner argues that case, and I'm quoting from their brief, confirms that the labor commissioner's use of uncodified definitions to define the job classifications does not constitute ad hoc rulemaking. I respectfully disagree. In their answers and in the pleadings, they initially admitted that the job descriptions were not promulgated with the input of any public, including the unions, including contractors, or anybody else. And on page 5 of the labor commissioner brief, they cite the case of Winsler and Kelly versus Department of Industrial Relations, a California case. And in that case, the California case recognized the labor commissioner's determination of the type of work covered by prevailing wages constituted a regulation, but contended the APA in California did not apply, and I quote, where the labor code provided for different process. In the state of Nevada, as the court knows, the labor code does not provide for a different code. It's not separate. In California it is, but not in the state of Nevada. And so the that's not applicable case here is the right of the labor commissioner to determine jurisdictions by saying, this is what a laborer does, this is what an electrician does, this is what an operating engineer does. That, interestingly, NRS 020 says in subsection 6, nothing in this section prevents an employer who is signatory to a collective bargaining agreement from assigning such work in accordance with established practice. So the question then becomes, what if doing so is contradictory to the job descriptions that the labor commissioner has set up? Which one's going to prevail, the job descriptions or this statute that allows them to assign the work according to whatever the locality is, whatever the jurisdiction of the IBEW in Las Vegas is, or the operating engineers in Clark County or in Washoe County is? Does that address adequately some of your questions?
Yes, it does, and it also addresses part of the other argument about whether or not the APA is applicable.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Whether or not the APA is applicable in this case, or whether or not we should be strictly guided by 338.030.
No, I think the APA is applicable in this case. And in 2001, as the record clearly indicates, Labor Commissioner Johnson at the time introduced a regulation that contained the very job descriptions, almost word for word, that are at issue right now. And in December of 2001, all the unions opposed, North and South, opposed the job descriptions being unilaterally promulgated by the labor commissioner. He did so at the Legislative Council Bureau, which is the agency that approves regulations. There was a big discussion, so they deferred to April of 2002. And on April 5th, 2002, the same regulation was introduced, but it did not have the job descriptions. The representation by the labor commissioner at that time, it's all in the record, was that there would be a meeting of contractors, involved unions, and everybody else. And then that never happened. And interestingly, in the record at Joint Exhibit Appendix 718 is an email from Johnson to Tanchek, the labor commissioner at the time in 2005, and I'd like to read a portion of it if I may. He said that in the interim, this is now after April 5th of 2022, in the interim, our Supreme Court came back with the Universal Electric decision, an unpublished decision, by the way, basically stating that it was, in fact, the labor commissioner's jurisdiction to determine classifications of workmen on public works. Classifications, okay? And this court in the Littlefield case said that he can't unilaterally determine classifications. In that case, it was actually take down a classification without going through the APA. And then continuing in the email, at that point, the issue surrounding the proposed regulation and classification authority became moot, in my view, and coupled with the poor levels of cooperation and assistance from the trade, I called it a day with victory intact and left it at that intact. Well, he says, just for the record, with a little smiley face. And so that tells me a lot about his attitude about, well, I don't have to do it because I have the right. But the APA, and like I said, in those cases that you asked me about, Justice Douglas, they talk about the APA is not just a figment of somebody's imagination, but it has meaning and it has effect. And I think in this particular case, it has to be applied. It clearly is applied.
The other hurdle that the district court put before you was whether or not this whole action should be barred because it's a time barred or latches is applicable. How do you respond?
I respond that under that statute that they cite, 0617, or it's 338-0617, I think it is that it has to be a regulation that is passed before you can appeal. In this particular case, there was no regulation that was passed. It was a unilateral promulgation of what I think an electrician does. And so there was the statute, in my view, never started. One of the other arguments that's presented, and I'll address, is that, under 338-030, you have the right to appeal after a determination was made. But clearly, the reading of that regulation, that statute, talks about the wage determination. It talks about holding a hearing. It talks about presenting evidence that the wage rate is different by 50 cents one way or the other, or you believe it to be, and you have evidence to support your belief. It has nothing to do with whether or not job descriptions are surveyed. Job descriptions are not surveyed. The statute is really clear that the wage survey says how many people were paid $20 an hour to do this work and how many people were paid $21 an hour to do this work, and they, from that, they determine the wage rate. So, in my view, those arguments that we had latches and failed to exercise it is a clear wrong decision by Judge Freeman.
You have about 3.5 minutes left. Do you want to reserve any?
I wanted to reserve 3 minutes. And thank you very much.
Ms. Cummings, would you put 7.5 minutes on the clock for the first to respond? Hold on for a second. Put 7.5 on. No, just put 7.5 on this, so he knows. I'm just trying to be real even-handed with everybody on this. I
appreciate that.
It makes it a little easier for you to gauge your when to sum up. Okay, now we're ready. Thank you.
May it please the Court. Jordan Smith on behalf of the Office of the Labor Commissioner. I'd like to focus my 7.5 minutes with the Court this morning, focusing on the application or not of the APA to the prevailing wage job descriptions that were posted back in 2002. This court held in City Plan that the Labor Commissioner has an inherent obligation under NRS 338.030 to define a classification or type of work and then determine the prevailing wage. And the court said that this process of defining a type of work and then determining the prevailing wage does not constitute rulemaking within the meaning of the APA. And that's precisely what
counsel, for the offset at the beginning, you started with City Plan, so I have to interrupt you. City Plan, the APA, was not raised. So that's one of the problems or the issues with the City Plan case. The APA wasn't in front of the court at the time. So the instant analysis you're attempting to make as to City Plan being controlling is problematic for us because the court didn't get into whether it applied or didn't apply. We're back to the basic kind of premise that was stated in Littlefield as to an agency engages in rulemaking when it promulgates, amends, or repeals an agency rule, standard, directive, or statement of general applicability which effectuates or interprets law or policy or describes the organizational procedure or practice requirement of an agency.
Even though the APA wasn't specifically raised in the city plan decision, I think the city plan decision is still informative, because in that case it held that it's an inherent obligation under the statute. This court has said in the Sierra Life Insurance case and many other cases that when there is a specific agency or division process set out by statute that is different than the general APA statute, the specific agency or division statutory process prevails. And in this case, that process is set out in NRS 338.030, not in the APA. NRS 3, subsection 2, requires the labor commissioner to annually survey work performed in the county to determine the prevailing wage. It's not a survey of occupational titles in the county. It's not a survey of what workers call themselves in the county. It's a survey of the type of work performed in the county each year.
And I guess that kind of, since you got into the annual survey, has the labor commissioner been conducting an annual survey? Because that goes to the latches argument that should be barred because the regulation was adopted in 2002. They brought notice, I guess, about 2008, and that goes back and forth. But has there been an annual review conducted?
Every year, the labor commissioner, by regulation, has to post the prevailing wage list on October 1st every year. And that's been happening since the first posting back in 2002. So, Justice Douglas, you're absolutely right. This has been posted every year since 2002. If appellants had a problem with this, they could have followed the process under NRS 338.0302 sub A. And appellants focus on sub B of that provision, which says a change in rate by 50 cents. But sub A, which they ignore, says that any person entitled to be heard under subsection 5, which includes unions and contractors, can present an objection with substantiating evidence that a different wage prevails, period. And what does that process look like? That process looks like it's not a focusing on the rate of wage. That process looks like people in such and such county do this type of work at this type of rate. It's not a numbers-based argument. There's a focus on the type of work actually being performed. And so that's what the job descriptions do. They describe and define a type of work.
If, in fact, they have a duty to make an annual review, wouldn't that annual review start the statute of limitations all over again? So we wouldn't be going back to 202. We'd go back to the last review period for a statute to be effective as a limitation.
Perhaps. But it would have to be under that statute, NRS 338.020 sub 2, that objection has to be made within 30 days. So to the extent there's a statute of limitations, that 30-day statute of limitations in that subsection would apply. But the only thing at issue in the petition here is the 2014 job descriptions, and that 30 days and the 2 years under 233B061 has long expired.
But it talks in that 338 as to rulemaking. And so that's kind of the dance we're doing here.
In 233B rulemaking or in NRS 338.030?
338, rulemaking.
Well, the point in NRS 338.030 is that it's not rulemaking, and that's what the court said in the city plan decision. It's not rulemaking. If it were rulemaking, the wage rates themselves would have to go through the APA every year. And this court has never said that the wage rates themselves have to go through the APA. That gets posted through the statutory process every year on October 1st. So it's because the job descriptions are inherently tied to finding out what that rate is, you can't divorce the rates from the job descriptions themselves. And that process is set out by statute, not in the APA.
The argument that the appellant has made is that there's no regulation regarding job descriptions. Technically, they don't exist, and therefore locals, your claim cannot be barred. So that's your response as to that issue.
Well, I have a little bit of different response to that point as well. If, say, we're back in 1937, and we're the first labor commissioner after the Davis-Bacon Act was passed, nothing requires the use of just one word to create the prevailing wage list. The 1937 statute is very similar to the current one today. The first labor commissioner started by using carpenter, bricklayer, and so on. Had the first labor commissioner used a description instead of those titles, say the first commissioner said, framing a building in this county gets paid this much, running electrical wire in this county gets paid that much. Had the list started out as descriptions and not classifications, then appellants would have no claim. Because again, under the statute, this is part of the labor commissioner's inherent authority. The fact that the labor commissioner started with classifications and then added job descriptions later doesn't mean the job descriptions are no longer part of the labor commissioner's inherent authority. And all of this is consistent with the Littlefield decision. Littlefield said that job descriptions which merely set the prevailing wage rate aren't subject to the APA. The APA only applies if there is an addition, deletion, or substantial modification. The job descriptions here didn't add any classifications. The job descriptions here didn't delete any classifications. And the job descriptions here didn't substantially modify any classifications. There's no argument before the court or evidence before the court, for example, that the contractor's description for Clark County doesn't accurately reflect what carpenters do in Clark County. The laborers don't even argue that their laborer description is wrong. And that's why counsel's hypothetical doesn't really solve the problem. If you take the job descriptions away, you're still going to have a dispute as to which classification is doing what type of work. And the only argument about substantial modification comes from page 11 of their opening brief, which states that they set jurisdictions. These job descriptions set jurisdictions. Well, if your honors look at page 24 of the record, which is the job descriptions for the 2014, they say at the very top, these aren't intended to be jurisdictional in scope or prevent somebody from performing the work of more than one class. So they're not jurisdictional. It just means if somebody performs the work of one classification, they get paid that rate. If they perform the work of another classification, they get paid that rate. We respectfully request the district court be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Whitehead.
May it please the court, Jonathan Whitehead on behalf of Northern Nevada, Building and Construction Trades Council of Northern Nevada. Justice Douglas, I'd like to address what you initially raised with Mr. Jordan, and that was the cases and how they're applying. And if you look at the last case, the Littlefield case that this court issued, it gave the general concept of rulemaking. And then it went on and stated that when the labor commissioner adds, deletes, or substantially modifies workers' classifications, that action constitutes rulemaking. And so I'm sort of a rule and book guy. Do most of my work in the trial setting. And so one of the things we raised in our brief was that the appellant failed to ever demonstrate that these job descriptions substantially modified the classifications. The argument by the appellant was because former Commissioner Johnson attempted to get it adopted as a regulation, that meant they modified it. But what we presented was evidence that what Commissioner Johnson did was he used the same information he had been using prior to seeking to submit them and get them adopted as regulations. There was no evidence presented at the district court level how these job descriptions substantially modified the classifications. On that point alone, their argument fails. Now, the thing that my client presented and put a lot of effort into in the district court level was whether or not a writ was the proper remedy for them to seek.
Before you get into that, so your position would be that 338 is controlling as to that issue?
It is one of the issues. We actually raised three different.
There was no obligation to have a public hearing as to promulgating, quote, rule based upon the information argument.
That's correct, because what these did is they defined the classifications. Now, if you look at what took place here, and I always like to say, why are we really here? And why we really are here is because the laborers want to have their cake and eat it. What they want to do is have this vague so that they can go out and seek the skilled trades work and try to get it done at the laborers' rates. And when you get a misclassification proceeding filed by the skilled trades, they go and say, look, if they're going to take our work, they're going to have to get paid at our rates. And then what happens is the skilled trades actually get hired. So, what in 2001, the appellant was arguing and objecting to these being in place. They have objected ever since. And they had every opportunity under 338.030 to come in and object to those job descriptions. They never did it. I asked the business manager for the appellant why they didn't go forward and object under that statute. And his initial argument was, well, it's not part of the wage prevailing list. And then we showed the document that was Exhibit 1 to their petition, and it isn't part of the prevailing wage list. They abandoned that argument,
And they went into what Mr. Lincoln argued earlier, that he contends under the statute they can only object if it's 50 cents or more. And that's not what the statute says. Under 2A, any party under Section 5 can object and request a hearing, and that includes unions and other interested parties. Section 2B talks about if it's 50 cents or more. But if you take their argument that the prevailing wages is affected by the job descriptions, it clearly arguably could state that would be 50 cents or more. But more important, if you look at the Littlefield decision, the Southern Nevada Operating Engineers decision, and that's where the labor commissioner removed an entire classification. At the very end of this court's decision, the court stated that the act of removing the entire classification from prevailing wage list, changing wage due to all soil testers, constituted an action under NRS 338.030, which any interested party should have been provided the opportunity for a hearing. In other words, the court was saying that they had every right, if you remove a classification, to request a hearing under there, which really kind of defeats their argument. Now, the second thing that we raised in the district court that wasn't addressed by the district court order, but was they could have sought judicial review of a wage classification hearing, and more importantly, they could have sought an injunction. In 2008, Assemblywoman Debbie Smith, based upon Mr. Daley's request, got a Legislative Council Bureau opinion. And in that opinion, they said, yes, this constitutes rulemaking, and the proper procedure is to get an injunction. And that's what happened in Littlefield. They got an injunction, they peeled it up. So the writ was not the proper mechanism to try to raise this issue. And so we would submit that the district court properly concluded that a writ should not have been issued. Now, to address the latches argument, Your Honors, my client's position was not statute of limitation, it was latches. And that is that for 12 years, the appellant argued and objected about these job descriptions, but never took any legal relief. They would be in wage classification proceedings, and they would argue when it was beneficial to them, the job descriptions were null and void. But then, when it was beneficial to them, they would argue that they were effective and that they should be used to determine the wages. In fact, after filing this petition in the district court, in a wage classification proceeding and afterwards, they were arguing that the job descriptions were valid and should be used to their benefit. So latches is when we knowingly sit on our rights to the detriment of others. The entire public works industry since 2002 have been relying upon these job descriptions. In 2008, the appellants knew that they could go seek an injunction and make their arguments. And the evidence before the court is that they made a strategic decision not to seek an injunction because the standard was too strict. And what we will submit that the evidence also shows is what they thought is that they sought a writ, my client that is 17 affiliated unions, including the laborers, which we do not represent in this action, would have objected. And they knew that, so they sought to go through under the radar. Now, the argument in response to that,
Mike, your time is up. Your time is up. Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Langton, you have 3 minutes and 29 seconds.
I'll be quick and I'll have to jump around. Let me address the very last one that I think was made in the lower court. There was no evidence whatsoever that anyone changed their position as is required in a latches decision. Also, when the accusation is made that the laborers want to have their cake and eat it too, there's absolutely no evidence to that. But when you're in a decision in an adjudicative process, where the rules have been set and you disagree with the rules, let's say the strike zone is supposed to be 18 inches, but they're calling it at 24 inches, you play according to those rules. And that's why, and there was never ever any evidence whatsoever that we agreed with the rules, but we played with, by the rules. The other thing I wanted to say is that in reference to 338, the right to appeal, subsection 5 or subsection 6 of 338.030 states, at the hearing, any public body, the crafts affiliated with the state federation or of labor or other recognized national labor organizations, and the contractors in the locality may be heard. Last sentence, from the evidence presented, the labor commissioner shall determine the prevailing wage, not who does the work. So that's a moot argument. In my reply brief on pages 9 and 10, I addressed the all right, cite Corey versus Whittlesey Bell, Luxury Limousine, 102 Nevada, 302, where this court stated, establishing that defining means establishing limits or stating exactly what a thing is. That's exactly what the labor commissioner did here when he said, this is the definition, and that word was used two or three different times by counsel for appellees, that that's what it did. It limited what was available, what could be done. In my view, the problem with the labor commissioner's reliance on city plan is that the labor commissioner was, as the justice has pointed out, acting in an adjudicative capacity, and at that point the issue was what the wage rate should be, not what the work was. And so the courts has already ruled numerous times that you can't, in an adjudicative capacity, make a rule.
Very quickly, he noted that you failed to introduce any evidence as to modification or change.
I'm sorry.
He stated that you failed to introduce down below any modification or change as to the...
In our position? We did not change the position. The laborers were very, very consistent that these should be ruled. The people that changed it are the interveners. In 2001 and 2002, there was actually their attorney, and we all were against the rulemaking procedures. And it wasn't until this case was filed in 2014 that I or my client knew that the position had changed for either the Northern Nevada or the Southern Nevada Building Trades Councils. And so there was no testimony, evidence whatsoever, affidavits whatsoever, that anyone had, quote, changed their position. In other words, were they opposed to it or not opposed to it? There wasn't any evidence whatsoever that anyone had changed their positions. I thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you.
The court thanks all three of the attorneys for their fine arguments and their briefs in this matter. Very professional, all three of you. Congratulations. This matter will stand submitted.